Hello everyone, welcome to the Digital Marketing Gyan, where we keep on sharing some of the informative tools, techniques, case studies and latest updates in the digital marketing domain. I'm your host Prince Kumar, and today we will discuss about sales in digital marketing with our guest Jan Morse. Jan is the Chief Revenue Officer at OneUp Sales. He was awarded the accolade of BASMA UK Sales Director of the Year and was listed in the top 50 sales keynote speaker by Top Sales World in 2019 and 20. Jan has been a regular judge on Women in Sales Awards, Top Sales Awards, BASMA and the UK Sales Award. Hi Jan, welcome to our show.
Hi, thank you, and a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So Jan, with so much sales awards, your corporate journey must have been an amazing one. Can you please shed some light on your journey so far?
Yeah, so in simple terms, I work in the IT technology sector. I started off as a techie and then ended up moving into sales many, many years ago, in inside sales, then to field sales, then to management, leadership, etc. So I continue to learn today and evolve, because I think what's important as part of our conversation is the world's changed so radically. I know we talk about digital sales, digital marketing, but even in the last 10 years, there has been so much change in how we engage with customers and the technology and the approaches and how we behave as customers. And when I speak often to a room full of, whether it's sales or marketing people, one of the things I always push onto the audience is, all of you are customers. Think how you behave differently today. Think how you digest information differently, how you are influenced differently to how you were 10, 20 years ago, right? Marketing, advertising, all of that stuff. It's all changed because of technology, because of Web 2.0, because of social media. We live in a different world where the way we digest messaging and information has changed as a customer. So we have to change on the other side how we interact with that potential customer, whether it be B2B or B2C, in the understanding they're a different entity now because of the world around them has changed, right? We've all got smartphones. We've all got access to social media, to review sites, and we all look at Amazon reviews. Or, you're going to see a movie. If you're thinking of seeing a movie, you're no longer just going to ask a friend, or have you seen it? Do you know anyone who thinks it's good? Within seconds, from any device, anytime, anywhere, you can pull up and see what the world thinks of that movie, right? What people like you think, because of the people, your peer group that you connect with, typically you've chosen people like you. It's the behavior we see online. So you can find out third party opinion and peer group opinion like you never could before in history. That changes the way people view your brand as an individual and as a company, as a corporation, and how they interact with you. So long answer to a short question, but I think what's relevant now is what I've seen happening working in the technology space is that change is accelerating faster and faster. It used to be we thought technology moved quickly, and in 5 years you'd look at how things had moved. Now we're looking at on an annual basis, and there are a plethora of tool sets out there for all of this stuff, right? For email marketing, digital signage, whatever you want to look at, there are tons of innovative tech products out there that weren't there 5 years ago.
Definitely. So every day means it's a kind of new kind of, learning. Today, if we are learning everything, then we are not sure that, will it be relevant tomorrow or not. We have to keep on updating with the latest changes in this technology that is happening day by day.
Yeah, we have to stay relevant to the audience, Right. So I always say to people, you know, when I look at this and work with other marketing leaders, or as I do today as chief revenue officer, own sales and marketing, the first thing I want to understand is who is the ideal persona customer for the product or service? Who is that? Because it isn't everyone. There are very few products or services where there might be a wish of the business of we'd like to sell this to everyone, but that's not realistic. Realistically, who is your target customer? Who is your ideal persona customer? And how do they behave? Where do they get information from? Where do they get validation from? Where's their digital footprint, right? Because there's no point looking at the world and going, oh, there's all this digital marketing we could do, if it isn't relevant to your target audience. If your target audience is of a demographic, perhaps an age group, perhaps a particular vertical market sector, but is of a demographic where they're not on social media, right? So, you know, for example, in technology sector, people are on social media because it's inbred into what we do. But if you go to another sector, there are other industry areas where social media is just not used. You know, how many lawyers are on social media and stuff? Because they realize that there's limitations of what they can do based on the market segment they're in. So it might be that you could run every Facebook ad you want in the world. You could do every LinkedIn automation technique you want, and it will have no impact at all if your target persona is not on the platform or is not operating in that way. So there's not one style or approach fits all. And too often I see generic approaches around digital marketing or discussions around it, that here's a cookie cutter thing, just use it. Well, firstly, understand who your persona target market is. Secondly, where they operate. How do they behave as a customer or consumer? And then, is this relevant to that? Because if it's not, you could spend all the money you want on it, but it's not going to generate the results because it's not the right one solution does not fit all. You know, one type of content does not fit all. You know, in some segments, writing an informative blog drives a lot of inbound interactions onto more gated content that drives, you know, inbound lead flow. In another segment, it just doesn't work that way. So you've got to understand what is applicable to your target audience, what is going to work, and work that out. And that's, again, yeah, a bit, I think, that a lot of people miss, that they look generically of, we've got to be on social media, we've got to create lots of blog content, and we've just got to push loads of it. Look how much we did. Look at all the activity we did. Okay, is it generating any results? And if not, is it because your target audience isn't reactive to that style of information on those platforms?
Definitely. Very right. So, Jan, you have been into the sales part where you have been, you know, one of the leaders in your market. So, can you help us understand what is social selling?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I've been through an evolution, I guess, over quite a few years. And people ask me, what is social selling and how did you get into social selling? And the whole truth is by accident, because in trying to stay relevant to the target customer, I saw the biodynamics starting to change, where people weren't interacting in the same way with your content, that the old techniques weren't working and generating the same results. So I'm constantly, and even today, I'm looking at, well, what's changing and what's out there that you can change at this end, right? Selling and marketing to the customer. And started to realize that, well, social media, people are starting to use social media and research it and look for informative information there, right? So where you might have posted a blog before and then done a newsletter and sent it out there, often perhaps they're finding it now on LinkedIn, or they're finding it on a Facebook group that's relevant to what they're interested in, right? And there are groups on all these platforms where people that are interested in, whether it be, you know, artificial intelligence, whether it be accounting practices, whether it be best new design techniques, whatever it is, there are specialist groups on these platforms where people group together interested in these niche subjects. And that's often where they get their influence from, and that's often where they get their information from. So what you've got to figure out is, and I was looking for, is, well, how do I get to my target audience? And there's two things there. What, with social, I think the two differences are, one is, how do I get to them directly? But two is, how do I get to them indirectly? And what I mean by that is, if someone's in my target profile audience as a suspect customer, but they don't follow any of my social accounts, any of our company accounts, firstly, they're not going to see anything. We can create as much content as we want, but they're not going to see it natively. They're not, because they're not following us. But who do they follow? Who does influence them? Because they will follow industry influencers. They will follow leaders in their segment, right? Or membership organizations and things such as this. So any content that comes out from anyone that they follow, they are going to see it in their feed. So the trick then becomes, how do you engage? How do you create content that reaches your target audience indirectly? I.e., either someone reshares it that is likely to have the following. So if there's a membership organization, right, whose membership is my target audience, how do I get them to reshare my content? Because if they share it, it's gonna reach the target audience because they're following them. And then that target audience might come to your site, might go and gate across another piece of information, or over time, if you can programmatically do this repeatedly, might organically follow you directly, in which case they're now seeing your content directly. But you don't just, too many times I've seen people go, right, we've set all the social accounts up and we've written some great blogs and content and we've posted it. And what we've also done is gone and got all of our staff through what we call social advocacy. I've got all the staff to reshare it. Okay, but if your target audience isn't following you or your staff, your information, your content, no matter how good it is not penetrating their feed. They're never going to see it. So you've got to think differently about this stuff. So that led into social selling, right? Because what I realized a long time ago is, actually, normally the voice of the company is solely marketing. And marketing will push something out and they'll try and get people on their mailing list. But if you've got, let's pick 30 salespeople who have worked in your industry segment and worked for competitors before, and they've built their own personal network of people, influencers, and journalists, or whoever that is in your vertical niche or territorial segment, they will have followers who are the people you want to get your content to, number one. So one is, you can use social advocacy for them to share good content. The second one is, those individuals could also create their own content if you trust them and empower them to do so. And this is where I think the real challenge comes, because for a lot of organizations, this has always been a marketing owned part of the business, right? The marketing wraps their arms around, we control content, we control where it goes, we control logos, brand, everything is corporate marketing police. And then along comes things like social selling, which is using social media platforms from an individual salesperson as a way to engage a prospective customer into what leads to, at some point, a real world conversation. Social selling is just about using social media to get engagement. It isn't about sending an email to someone like you used to send them an email for marketing. Send an email to 500 people and hope some of it comes back. That's not social selling. Social selling is about very targeted. I want to sell to you, so I'm going to research you. I'm going to understand the type of content you digest. I can see who you follow. Who do you share as contacts? Can I leverage a piece of content through one of those two? Can I get a recommendation or endorsement? Or is it a longer game where I follow your content and I interact with it authentically to a point where you notice me in a professional manner and think, Ian made a good comment there, and you comment back to one of my comments on your shares, for example, and we end up slowly feeling like we know each other a little bit, and there's some rapport and commonality there that ends up in a conversation, right? It's a very different approach to marketing, pushing stuff out, trying to drive people back to a website to gate the content and get you gated as fast as we can. Social selling is much more subtle, and it needs to become from an individual. It's not something you can do at a group or controlled level. But that often leaves marketing people uncomfortable, because you've got salespeople now potentially out there that you might call rogue, not under your control, right? They're interacting and commenting on things that's not under corporate control. It's been proven to work. There are plenty of stats and reports out there across the globe. Social selling works, but you've got to get past that barrier of corporate control, because if you put corporate barriers in and control, social selling doesn't work, right? Because you've lost the personality of the individual. So my advice is you train people on social selling, you support it, you get marketing and sales aligned that, guys, that you can't have this barrier of control any longer. The world has changed because your customer has changed, right? The old world, the old way of doing it worked. It doesn't create the results it used to create anymore, because the customers now behave differently.
Definitely.
And you can keep doing it the old way, but you're not going to get the success rate, or you can live with some discomfort and actually we need to do things differently. And off the back of social selling comes, of course, personal branding, which is, well, if you're going to have individuals out there representing you publicly, then they need to look good, right? If someone comes back, guess where someone may come back to? They might not come back to your corporate website, right? They might cut more likely is if I've interacted with you as a prospective customer on social media and I've seen something you published, and I've shared a blog of some research that we did, which is a marketing asset. Great, thank you, marketing. But I've looked at what you've published and I've made a comment onto your post, whether it be on LinkedIn, Facebook, wherever it might be, that you've posted something, and I've commented and attached this document. Really interesting, the point you made, but this contradicts one of the main. There's nothing wrong with disagreeing professionally, right, and authentically. I wonder what you think about page 2.3 on this white paper, because this is a bit of research we did. Now engaging authentically, I haven't tried to sell you. If that individual starts to engage, they're going to come back to my profile and go, who's this Ian guy who's commented here then? Who? The logic is they'll click, right? They can see I've commented and added something. You tell me they're not going to click and see who the hell is Ian, out of curiosity. And the minute they do that, my personal brand carries more weight than the corporate brand, because they've come back to look at, and they're engaging, and they're going to look at whether they comment back to Ian, right? They're not commenting back to XYZ corporate brand, this faceless brand that they've, they're now seeing an individual human being who, well, actually, Ian, no, I think you missed the point, blah blah blah. Oh, I didn't realise that. Now, sometimes that might end up in other people chipping in, or you end up with a phone conversation, right? That's what social selling and personal branding is about. And it is a skill that most people haven't been taught. It's not rocket science. It's not incredibly difficult. It doesn't cost you money like a corporate brand does. But it absolutely works and has an impact. And anyone ignoring it and thinking today they don't have a personal brand, I would suggest that they wake up and smell the coffee, because even if you're not on social media, you have a personal brand, right? Your personal brand is others' perception of you. So your personal brand is anything you put out in your podcast, anything people see is representative of the perception they will have of you as an individual. So everyone has a personal brand, whether you like it or not. Anything anyone can find out about you is your personal brand, because that leads to a perception they have of what you're about and what you represent.
Definitely. That's the perfect thing that you have highlighted to our audience. Now, coming to the point that you have highlighted, that personal branding becomes an important point. Can you give a connection, or you can help the audience to understand how can personal branding help in sales? Because definitely you have told that personal branding is one of the important part that one should work upon. Can you just guide on how can the personal branding, if one works on his or her personal branding, then how it can help in improving the sales or the business of whatever organization he's working into.
Yeah, and I spoke about this pre-pandemic, and I think it's more important now. So pre-pandemic, I highlighted, as I have done, that everyone has a personal brand. With social media, that personal brand now can be global. So if you create your profile onto whether it be Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., that profile can be, unless you heavily restrict and control it, the majority of people create it and it's there. Now that can be viewed by anyone worldwide. Right. So your person, what you represent as your, the perception of you, is now out there. You've got worldwide reach for no cost. Right. You can have a free account, and however you look in your profile, and whatever content you share or like, other people in general can see what you're interacting with and see what you're about. If you post a bit of content, you share a video, or you speak to camera, as we see many people do now, they'll correct quickly because the technology is so easy, speak to camera and post that. There are apps now that let you create rich content with subtitling, all this stuff, really easily. So you don't have to be a digital editor or a publisher any longer to create rich content that you can represent. You can talk to camera, and talk about what you do, or talk about your thoughts about a particular subject. So what you've got to think about is your target audience in any way, shape or form going to interact with you as an individual on any social platform or find you? And what I always say to people is the first place to think about this is in your own personal career. Because if you're looking for a job, if you don't think the recruitment division, company, the recruiter will check you out on social, because that is you, you are the product. So they're going to check you, the product, out and see what they can find about you. And so often I get people say to me, well, it's never caused me any negative. And my answer is, you don't know that. All you know is no one's ever told you it's created a negative. That job you weren't shortlisted for, right? You may convince yourself, but unless you've asked the question, why wasn't I shortlisted, and got a factual answer, you don't know that it wasn't because the other candidates were more present on social media. Therefore, the company looked at it and thought, these people get it. These people get the modern world, and they're representing themselves more professionally. They care more. Whereas I looked at this individual's online presence, and it was shabby. It was out of date. There was no photo in the profile. Didn't give me a good feeling that they care about, up-to-dateness and all the rest of it. So they negated you because they had 50 candidates and they had to cut it down somehow. And unfortunately, whether you like it or not, small micro things like that are used to sift down candidates. So, your personal brand goes with you across your career. It is yours. So firstly, and particularly with a pandemic, as many people unfortunately have been affected in their careers, I've looked at many and coached a few and said, look, make yourself shine. Because if I'm looking at 10 candidates, the one that looks shabby online is the easy one to discount, because they don't seem to care about their personal profile and they don't get the modern world. What's going on? Or your online LinkedIn profile doesn't match your CV. Seen that many times where the dates don't, actually the facts don't align. Well, again, attention to perception. My perception therefore is you don't have attention to detail. So that's the first thing. It affects everyone, right? If you're ever going to change jobs and career in the modern world, shine this stuff up, right? So that's number one. If any prospective customer or existing customer may ever check you out online. So a next example would be pandemic world. We're all used to being on video conferences. right? Many people who've never done it, but pre-pandemic was, oh, it's a novelty, I've done it once. It's become commonplace where you're on a screen and there's 10 other people. Think about anyone listening. If you've been on one of those, have you ever spotted someone in that meeting where you see a name, Sue Smith or Dave Bloggs, whatever the name is, and think, oh, who are they? Well, I didn't. Maybe you don't know who they were on the call. I tell you what you're going to do while you're sat here talking on the call. You're probably going to pull up at another screen or another window and you'll be looking them up. Because I right now, while I'm talking to you right now, apart from where my hands are showing, I could be doing this and I could be quickly keying up and bringing up someone on a LinkedIn profile or searching Google their name, so-and-so at such and such company, and see, oh my gosh, they're the CFO. Okay, click. I can be seeing this stuff and you don't know I'm doing it. That's what's changed in the pandemic, right? In the real world pre-pandemic, if you were going to do that and check someone out, you needed to know you were going to meet them. And you needed to proactively check them out before you went into a meeting room and sat in front of them. Because very few people were brave enough or silly enough to open a device up while I'm talking to you in a meeting and start bringing up your profile and checking you out in front of you, because it doesn't feel right. But remotely, boy, is it easy to do that with no one noticing. So today, we've gone from the first impression. We've always been told, I'm sure everyone's heard this, the first impressions count. The first 5 minutes are the most important. The first 30 seconds, people make a judgment on you. All this stuff, right, in the real world. Now, I would suggest a high proportion of the time, the first impression is a digital first impression. And that is going to be whatever they can see of you quickly via a quick search. Right, they're going to search you because they're having a meeting with you online, or they're about to jump on a conference with you. Your prospective customer is about to jump on and see a demo or a discussion about your product, or you're in a negotiation stage with them at the third meeting and they've just brought the CFO on board. What are the chances that some of those individuals are going to check your profile out before they have the conversation with you, the same as you might do of them? Right, and they're going to make micro decisions of, do they like the look of you? Do they think they can trust you? You know, and it's subconscious. They're not sat there going tick box. Oh, they look trustworthy. We all do it. We all see someone who has make a stereotypical first impression of them within microseconds as humans, and we cannot help it. If that is a digital one, because you're not in a meeting with them and you're bringing up whatever's online, and the first thing you see online when you search their name is something negative or shabby or whatever it be, that's going to be your first impression. You can't unsee it, right? Whatever you find, you interpret, and now becomes part of your perception of that individual until they manage to change it. So why wouldn't you use personal brand to give a strong positive first impression rather than take any risk with it? So it affects every, potentially, you've got to assume it affects every first interaction you have with a prospective customer, an existing customer, anyone that might be able to see something of you. They're going to make a micro judgment of whatever they can read or see, and that's going to be their perception of you. It's the way we work. It's the way humans tick.
Definitely. We keep on seeing that, you know, before having an actual one-to-one interview, before that only the interviewer might have, you know, most of them have made their mind that should I be going with this or not, because they have scanned their social media profiles, they have gone through that, you know, that each industry, is he connected with the industry persons, what is the value that he is, you know, giving to the his society or to his audience, and based on that, you know, before that interview, one-to-one interview only, they had created some other the impressions of that candidate. So rightly said.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, go and look at your own, you know, if you've got a LinkedIn profile, go and have a look and you can see who's viewed your profile. And it's really interesting for me, when you've got a customer meeting or an interview or something like that, have a look then and how many people have viewed the profile. So here's an easy tip. Make sure if you're about to see a customer, a prospective customer, whoever, and there's three people going to be there, view all their profiles. Because there's a good chance they'll notice. I've sat in meetings before, and I've had interviews for jobs before over my career where I've been there and they've commented, here's a perception point, let alone looking at my profile. They've commented, so we notice you viewed our profile. Right? They've noticed I've taken interest in their profile. That alone often puts me above the person next to me. If we're both equal in everything else, then, well, I took the trouble to view it. They may then ask you, any questions. I might say, well, I noticed two of you have worked together twice before. Out of interest, how come? Now I've demonstrated I actually read and paid interest. Now I'm using the viewing of their profile as an advantage over whoever I'm being compared to, right? But also by viewing their profile, would you not believe it is more likely that they're going to then see that you viewed their profile and you're now in their feed and they click on you to view you back, right? How simple is that as a trick? It takes a couple of seconds and I want them to notice I viewed their profile because I care. I want them to notice. So if I'm going to a meeting and there's eight people going to be in it, I will go and look at all their profiles and I want to understand, have I got any shared connections with them? If I'm going into that meeting, whether it be online or in person, and there's eight people there, is it useful for me to know more about those people before I get there? For example, to identify that one of them perhaps used to work with someone that I know really well. So in that meeting or that web call, if the opportunity presents itself, is it not great to say, Dave, didn't you? Yeah, I noticed you used to work with Alison Green at XYZ. Yeah, I did. I knew her well. Oh my, such a small world. She used to be a customer on such and such. There's now rapport and conversation, and I've just demonstrated, I've taken note to find that out. Right. So there's so many opportunities to use social selling and your personal brand to build rapport, which obviously leads to relationship, but to build rapport with another human being in a conversation or engagement that you're going to have, as opposed to you turn up and you've got eight people and you just wing it, right? You just, how you doing? They may have looked you up and found out things like that you haven't spotted. Right, I want to spot them, not let them be the one instigating things and going, how do you know so-and-so? Oh, and be caught off guard. I've already figured out we've got these shared contacts, or you used to work at another customer of mine. I want to know that beforehand so I can bring it into the conversation in an appropriate manner. Right, and all of this stuff out there, it's your decision as an individual listening to this, whether or not you do these things or not. It's all in your control. It's not about spending money. It's about, do you care enough about the opportunity this brings you in your role today and across your career to care about your own digital brand, your own digital marketing as an individual? Because you have the opportunity to do it and represent yourself. And to answer your question about what you get from it, well, through doing this, and not because I set out to do this, but through doing this, I'm now used by many global brands as a social influencer on B2B cloud computing technology. Now, I didn't set out to do that. That's an accident, because I wrote a bit of content and created it and published it on LinkedIn and then shared this and did this. And it's taken many, many years. I'd probably say over a 10-year period from playing with this stuff trying to figure out how do I use, where does sales and marketing overlap? It's now led me into a position 10 years on where I have the pleasure of speaking with people like yourself, and lots of opportunities come to me. I get outreach all the time of, Ian, we saw some content, or we've seen you on such and such a list. Would you like to contribute to our blog? Or we've got this piece of content going out. Would you like to give us comment to be used?
Okay, yeah. So you have briefed a lot about the personal branding and how one should be working upon that. Now, something related to personal branding is also staff social advocacy. Do you think this staff social advocacy helps in increasing organizations' branding?
Yeah, and this is what I touched on earlier. This is, so staff social advocacy is, in simple terms, it's a corporate brand creating a piece of content and then having staff share that piece of content. So if you're in a company today where marketing email you as an employee saying, we've just posted this new blog, please share it on your social, etc. Please go and like and share it. That's social advocacy, right? It's staff social advocacy. The challenge is purely, the value of that is purely down to, in my opinion, whether or not your staff have a social following that is in your target persona audience. So if you've got a member of staff who's got 22 followers on Twitter, and those 22 followers are all the people at their local, you know, gardening club or in their village or all their friends, whether they share your piece of content or not, it's not going to have any impact, right? And yes, it will give you another like or a share, but it's not going to make a great deal of difference because they've only got 22 followers, right? And the way the algorithms work on the social media, although they don't publish it, there's a lot of knowledge out there about how this works. If you get someone of influence who shares your content and they've got 3 million followers and their audience is very engaged with them, i.e., you know, if you look at extreme example, Donald Trump or the Kardashians, their social profiles, the algorithms know how important they are with social influence on that network. So if they share a piece of content, your piece of content gets greater weighting than if you get 20 members of staff share it, who've all got 100 followers each, right? So it's not about how many people like it. It's about what is the strength of the rating of that individual, in effect. So this is why when you create content, what you really want is social advocacy from influencers in the market who have got the ranking on those social platforms and the influence that the algorithms will pick up. Hang on a minute. If this individual, if you get five superstars, as an extreme example, sharing a piece of your content, the algorithms are going to figure out this piece of content must be a bit interesting. And the algorithms are going to push your piece of content farther and higher so more people will see it. Therefore, it likely gets more visibility, more engagement, and therefore it creates that snowball. It's very hard to fake create that snowball through social advocacy of your staff. Because, oh, we've got 1,000, you know, you might be a big company, you might have 1,000 staff. So you send out to everyone, please like and share this piece of content. And 200 of them share it, and their total following across the 200 people is 3,000 people. Right? It's not going to get a lot of weighting. It's not suddenly going to make your content go viral, because the people sharing it, it's superficial, to be blunt. So the real thing about social advocacy is identifying who are the people with influence and social impact and reach. Who have the audience that overlaps with your target market, right? So when I do social advocacy or do engagement or create a piece of content for one of the global cloud brands, it's because they know I've got following engagement in the cloud sector relevant to what they're interested in, their relevant audience, right? I don't get approached by, I don't know, a sportswear manufacturer, because I have no profile in that sector. I have no influence, and my followers aren't sports people, or they're not their target audience. They're not horse riders. They're not golfers. So if you come to me and pay me to share, do a bit of content, great. But my audience doesn't match your target persona, so it's pointless, yeah. Right? But if you're a golfing manufacturer, then that's why they'll go to someone who's a professional golfer or a golfing magazine or something like that, because the people who follow their content are relevant to the target. They overlap the target audience. So that's who you want to share your content, right? Go and get the number one golfing magazine in the world to share your new, you know, theory about XYZ in golf, or your new blog of the top 10 tips to whatever, because the audience that's already following them, their content, is the audience you want to read your content and you want to engage with. So it makes sense. So that's the key thing, is social advocacy is about creating a good piece of content, whatever format that is, video, whatever it is, and then what is the most effective way? Who is the ideal people to share this, to reach the max? Who's our target audience for this piece of content? And who does that audience already follow and engage with, that if they share it, like it, engage with it, that target audience is going to see it, right? That's the theory. It's not easy to do, right? Because you're not going to go out there and say, here's a new piece of something I want to do. I want the Kardashians to share it. Well, guess what? They're going to charge you a fortune to do it, because everyone wants them to do it. That's the world of the social influencer. Yeah. But in business, there are a lot of hacks you can do around this. For example, simple example, if you identify, look, there's this business influencer who, I don't know, the accountancy sector really follows, and they speak often, and you know, they've got a profile. What you could do is create some piece of content and ask that influencer for comments. But I get asked this a lot, is we've created this piece of content. Could you write a forward for it? Could you give me a quote that we can use in this content, which gives me profile in what they're putting together? Now, guess what? If they take a quote for me in a piece of content they've created that they're going to promote globally, and then they share it and tag me in, perhaps with an image quote of what I've said, right? And Ian Moyse quoted, bum, bum, bum. Is there a likelihood, therefore, I'm going to share that tweet? Because it's about me. It's engaging me as part of their content. It's more likely then I will share it, in which case they reach my audience, because there is value, intrinsic value. They've involved me as part of it. So that's one of the tricks you can do, I've often done, is think about micro influencers and go and ask them for a comment for your article, for your blog. Go and ask, you know, get them engaged in it so they're part of it. And therefore, there's more likelihood they'll want to share the content because they're in it.
Definitely. So you have talked about three important topics out today. The first one was social selling. The second was personal branding. And then the third one was the staff social advocacy. Now, one thing is common in most of them is having an authenticated content, an authentic content that can have the real engagement. So can you shed some light on, the authentic content that all three must follow to have a better engagement on the platform?
Yeah, so across all of those, what's key, you're absolutely right, is the word authenticity. And giving value. So I'll add this piece in, right? Is think outside in. Why are people going to follow you or your content? Right? Why are they going to do that? And what they're looking at, why do you do it? Think of you as an individual. Why do you follow someone? Well, typically it's because, well, it's something you're interested in. And when you look at the content you get, you like it. If you glance through a feed on any of the platforms, and you have ever clicked follow on something, why did you do it? Because whatever you saw, number one is you initially saw a piece of content that was of value to you, gave you some insight or value, right? And that it did it in an authentic way. And for me, authenticity a lot of the time is a non-selling way, a non-pitchy way. It's I'm giving you some value. If I look at a blog, and 90% of it is about why I should buy your product, that's not giving me value, right? It should be, here's the top 10 tips of how to be better at this or XYZ. If I read it And eight of those tips I only get if I buy your product, that's not authentic, right? If it's genuinely, here's 10 tips of how you do better personal branding, or how you bettering do X, what customer experience, whatever it is. And then at the bottom, you've got something that says customer quote or some validation or something that's advertorial. That's fine, because you've given me authentic intrinsic value from the time that I've given you to read your content. Okay. So it usually what happens is you see a piece of content that looks of interest. It then needs to be authentic to be fair to me. If not, I've then gone, well, hang on a minute. You're trying to sell to me. You've now turned a negative. Then I've got a positive feeling. Then the likelihood is, if you do this right, they have a look at what else you've got. So that blog piece brings you somewhere. And I look at that and then see another piece of content. If you like this, you probably will be interested in A, B, C. Well, that one looks interesting. Now I'm looking at your content. Now I'm seeing, actually, it's not one piece of content you've got that's interesting. There's a lot of stuff here that's useful for me. Now the likelihood is I'm more likely to follow, right? Because I'm interested in what else you're going to come out with. Then you can prompt them with a call to action of, if you found this content useful, follow us here, because we often share content about customer experience or how to do better support, whatever it is, your target audience. Oh, okay, I'll follow. Now, anything that you share, create is intrinsically in their feed, right? Now you've got them choosing to follow you. But to do that, you've got to create compelling, insightful content. And it's got to be authentic with an authentic voice. And by that, I mean not advertorial, not. I've clicked through too many times where I've seen something and thought, whoa, that looks interesting, right? It's clickbait. It looks fantastic. Find the top 10 new things you can do to XYZ. Top 10 tips for 2022, whatever. Great. And I've clicked through to get this white paper and I've got it down and it's 4 pages PDF. And as I look through, I look at it and within seconds I go, delete. I'm not even, because I've realized what basically it is a, you've got me interested, you've promised me something of value, but then what you've given me is a sales pitch for your product. Your product can help me do these things, but that's not what I signed up for. That's not, you didn't say, find out 10 reasons how our product can help do this. You didn't give me that choice. You weren't authentic. You said, 10 things you can do in 2022 to improve your sales efficiency, your customer, whatever it be. So I bought into that. And then you hit me with basically what you've given me is a falsification at the beginning, right? Why am I going to click around another content now? I'm deleting the bit you just sent me before. I haven't read it. I've glanced at it and realized you tricked me into trying to engage. Doesn't work. The buyer is far more sophisticated in today's world. What we're looking for is insight, right? We're all looking for, what don't I know? What do my peers know? What do people like me do that I'm not doing that I could gain benefit from? And we all want shortcuts. We all want quick hits of, give me something I can do without spending money and I can learn from and go, oh, if I did that, I'd be better off. Give me that, because then I'm, oh, that was good. That was good content. It might be 10 points, right? It might be 2 of them I get value from. You can't control that, but it was authentic content that gave me some value and gave me what it promised, which was 10 things to do X, Y, Z without any commitment back to you. You need to earn that, not force it upon me to, I need to buy something from you to get these benefits, right?
Definitely.
That's how you get people engaged. Authenticity is critical in today's content. The buyer, the reader, the audience is smarter than it's ever been before, and more MTV generation. You know, we make micro decisions of, we glance at it and we make a decision. I'm going to invest some time in this podcast, this video, whatever, or it's dead to me. And that's a quick decision. And if you're not authentic, it's going to end up in the wrong bucket very, very quickly.
Definitely. That is, you know, kind of the important thing that you have highlighted today. because whether it might be your sales pitch, whether it might be your personal branding, or if you're looking for your organization benefit, if you don't work or if you don't show your authenticity, nothing will work, because that is what everyone is looking for. Whether you it might be in the recruitment process, whether it might be in your job, highlighting these all things. So having an authentic profile or an authenticity everywhere is required. So definitely that you have highlighted in the profile. So with this, we have come to the end of today's episode. Thank you, Anne, for sharing these valuable advices with our audience. It was very pleasure having you on our show, and we'll love to have you again on our show.
Thank you. I appreciate that.